show called First Things First. I'm Jen Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. Button up, my friend. This is Nick Wright. We good?
We're great.
We are into the conference finals, which is great. There's much more to talk about with what happened last night. Zion is not, in fact, coming to New York. We'll let you know where he probably will go. The Lakers' dysfunction continues, because why have a day when we have no Lakers' dysfunction? But we got to start with the Western Conference Finals, so that we will do. Game one between the Warriors and the Blazers. Warriors without Kevin Durant look like vintage Warriors. Steph Curry with 36 points, including 9 three-pointers in this one. Got help from his fellow Splash brother, Klay Thompson, 26 points. Golden State takes game one with a 116-94 final win. Steve Kerr, now 18-1 in game ones in the last 5 seasons. Here's Steph Curry after the big win.
I know that I'm capable of on the floor, and the situation calls for me to be a little bit more aggressive, and hopefully that'll continue. So, obviously, it's nice to see the ball go in. I didn't shoot the ball well for 4.5 games, in last series, and got off to a good start tonight. So, want to maintain that.
Houston had some success, you know, trapping Steph and really getting out on him. Is this sustainable for you guys to keep dropping the big so far?
I can't remember. When he had 33 in the second half, were they trapping then?
Yes.
They were, and he scored 33 in the second half?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we'll look at that.
Okay. So what adjustments, CC, do you think Terry Stotts or Nick, whoever wants to start here, what adjustments do the Blazers now have to make heading into game two?
Well, that reporter is absolutely right. I think that's Anthony Slater. I could be wrong.
Yeah, it's a legitimate question.
It's a legitimate question. And it was a question that if you're watching the game last night, through a quarter, I thought the Blazers keep blowing their assignments. Why Enes Kanter is in there, not mm-hmm. – why is he standing midway in the lane when there's a pick and roll for Steph?
I thought it was miscommunication.
Right, I thought it was blown assignments, yeah. Miscommunication. But then when it happens again and again and again, you realize, wait, they're doing what they're being told to do, which is guard Steph Curry the way I would imagine he has never been guarded since his freshman year at Davidson. Never been guarded where there's a scouting report on him, which is, oh, this guy's the greatest shooter we've ever seen. And I understand Terry Stotts was frustrated, and I get the point, Steph scored 33 in the second. The Rockets' defensive game plan against the Warriors was sound, and it was because they have a ton of experience against the Warriors. They had built their team to defend the Warriors. They weren't good enough to beat them, but that's a separate question.
They have a good plan.
They had a good plan.
Yes.
And by the way, in that second half of game six when Steph went off, he wasn't shooting practice shots. He wasn't shooting step into it at the line, mm-hmm. Just ideal shots. They were tough shots. If the Blazers do not adjust, they will not be competitive in this series. So with respect to Terry Stotts, he's 36 hours after a game seven win. He's raw. He's upset because they got blown
sure.
out. They must adjust, and the players on the team. There was an article in The Athletic I read this morning. The players on the team all said, we need to watch the film and see how to change because they didn't make the Warriors work for it. Steph was great, but it was a lot because the Blazers almost seemingly wanted him to be great because of a mind-boggling defensive game plan.
And from the defensive standpoint, you're watching the game, you think that they don't have communication, they're blowing their assignments, and or maybe this is a team from the Eastern Conference that's not familiar. They didn't play Golden State mm-hmm. 4 times during the season. Damian Lillard and CJ haven't played them for the last 5 years a number of times. But that wasn't the case. So they're going to have to make some serious adjustments. From a defensive standpoint, they have to be able to adjust what they were doing. And Nick, the thing that let me know that it was a game plan. When I saw Kanter initially doing, I thought that they were trying to protect him because he's a defensive liability. Then I see the young kid, Zach Collins, who's a great athlete, who comes in from Gonzaga, and they have him at the free throw line or in the paint. So I know it was an overall philosophy. Now, we can say a built-in excuse. We were worried about the emotion of game number 7, them winning that on Sunday afternoon, flying to Oakland, playing the game. It was documented. They didn't practice, when they got to Oakland on Monday, didn't have a shoot around yesterday. So the first bad ball to go through the bucket yesterday for them was in the pregame. So to me, that was the to me more than anything else, just a lack of energy. They could not get the energy where they wanted it from game number 7, because in game number 7 against Denver, there was a buildup to that from game number 1. They looked a little tired. They looked a little lack of preparation. And you cannot have a game where Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, they shoot the ball 27 times in total of the 83 shots. From Golden State's standpoint, Klay and Steph shoot 47. They get 20 more shots than the other 100%. Than the other backcourt of Portland. So those are the adjustments that are going to have to happen if Portland is going to make this a series.
And the lack of shoot-around, the lack of practice, to me, that can account for some of Portland's struggles on the offensive end. But the struggles on the defensive end, to me, were they lost.
That's legitimate.
They lost this game before the game. Because Steph Curry, how many threes did he make last night? 9 of them? Well, 7 of them were what are called uncontested. Mm-hmm. Steph can make contested threes.
Practice
shots. Right. He can make
pull-up
threes.
Well, they got the ball boys and the old fat coaches guarding them.
You give Steph 10 uncontested threes, and he going to make 7 of them. He's going to shoot 70% on uncontested threes. It was ridiculous, and all they need to do when they watch the game film is look at how Golden State was guarding them, because Golden State guarded them with this mindset. They got 2 guys that can beat us. We are going to force anyone else to beat us. And Portland, even when one of Steph or Klay was on the bench, Jenna, even when it was Steph plus, Draymond, Quinn Cook, Kevon Looney, and Alphonso McKinney, they were still losing him.
Yes.
They were still losing. When it was just one of those guys plus 4 non-threats, they were still losing
him. And they did the same thing when Klay was on the court with them.
Absolutely right. Klay, without Durant, The biggest benefit you have is there are going to be segments of the game where the Warriors only have 1 real offensive threat. You have to swarm him, and if Alphonso McKinney beats you, so be it. But that wasn't it last night. What happened last night was the offense looked tired and the defense looked unprepared.
There were so many things we talked about that were going to factor into this game. How they were going to deal, how the Blazers would handle not having KD in there and take advantage of it. Who would win the battle of the backcourt, which clearly went to the Warriors. If the Blazers could slow down the Warriors in this one, which clearly they did not. But it all comes down to Steph Curry, who stepped up and once again said, well, this is what I do. We don't have Kevin Durant. We're going to do old school Warriors. And he did just that. How impressive was Steph Curry?
He was impressive. And Jenna, you're right. And that's why yesterday I thought with our friend Chris Broussard is going to be joining us today. That's why Steph should be in the conversation for best player. It's not his fault KD joined him. Now, him and KD being 2 of the top 3 players in the world, yeah, did they forfeit some stuff, potentially the MVP? But when you talk about the conversation as far as best basketball player in the world, and now with KD being out, you're getting ready to see what we saw with Steph when he was the 2-time MVP. So very impressive what he did. It was aided by the lack of a great game plan. And you cannot play Steph Curry and not make it a street fight. You cannot think you're going to chase him around the court and be able to think you're going to outdo Golden State their way. No. The reason why the Clippers series was a series, because from the beginning, they made it a street fight. They had Kevin Durant upset. They got into his mind. They knocked Steph down. They were physical with Klay. In the Houston series, the reason why he was off 4.5 games, Steph admitting that his shooting was because they roughed him up. So, yes, Steph was nice. If you let him play this finesse-type basketball, it's only going to get worse. Like, he will continue to do this. So you got to make this a street fight. You got to be able to rough it up. But, yes, Steph Curry, he put his mark on this game and on his statement as far as this offseason without Kevin Durant, why he should be included in that conversation, the best in the world.
And this is why I have so much respect for Stephen Curry, because he, more than Durant, more than Klay, more than anyone on the team, he sacrificed when he welcomed Kevin Durant onto his team. Because the world, in large degree, has forgotten how good he actually is, how dominant he can be, the gravity he alone can have on a defense. And this team was built, the team prior to Kevin Durant was built around his particular strengths. Bob Myers and company did a great job about round looking at their transcendent player and figuring out why Andre Iguodala would be a great role player for them, why Draymond Green is more valuable to them than other people, and their ability to lose a guy who was playing at a higher level in these playoffs than arguably anybody, lose him, and instantly transition back to, okay, this is who we originally were. This is who we're probably going to have to be next year and be dominant. They haven't lost. They haven't lost a game. They haven't lost a meaningful quarter since Kevin Durant went down. That's remarkable, and that's a testament to Stephen Curry.
All right, the Golden State Warriors take game one in the Western Conference Finals. CC mentioned Chris Broussard will be out here a little bit later on. We'll talk much more about this. Coming up, though, Zion is likely headed to New Orleans. So where does that leave Anthony Davis? That's next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We'll get to Zion and the Pelicans in a second, but first, Tigers Astros, Nico Goodrum making a sensational catch in foul territory. Woo!
Oh, nice. Misjudged that one a little bit, but
Nico
slide a little bit soon.
Oh, Nico's the guy who yesterday we showed his home run getting stolen by George Springer. And now he makes a play in the field, not stealing a home run, but kind of stealing an out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Steal that at bat from him.
Absolutely right.
But you're right. He mistimed this spot.
I don't know if he mistimed it.
You got to get on the ground. You got to hit the grass part before you hit that gravel part. That's why he started to slide a little early.
Warriors Blazers, Andre Iguodala on the fast break.
Watch Andre's
finds
face.
Jonas Jerebko for the easy layup.
Man, Andre's feeling himself these playoffs now. Shot a tidy little 48% from three in the previous series. Didn't do that much last night, but didn't need to. He has been, since he started into the starting lineup, man.
Trailblazers made Jerebko look like an all-star.
All right, finally, check out this little guy.
Drops the defender,
then looks back before drilling it.
Oh, and that's a deep shot now.
He looks like the little point guard used to play for Villanova.
Oh, yeah. Look at that.
Look at him. That's a deep
shot for this little fella.
Saucy.
He's so I love little.
Him, man. He's saucy.
Check to make sure. A little lefty, too. I like that.
All right, to the NBA draft lottery now. It's not since LeBron have we waited with such bated breath to see where a player would end up. And New Orleans, with just a 6% shot to get the number one pick, got the number one pick and will almost certainly draft Zion Williamson. The Pelicans would love a lineup which includes both Zion and Anthony Davis, but according to reports, drafting Zion will not change Davis's trade demands. He still wants out. Nick, would AD be making a mistake forcing a trade, giving up a chance to play alongside Zion there in New Orleans?
I don't think he would. I think Anthony Davis is totally correct and still reportedly wanting out of New Orleans, and that is not a knock on Zion, who I think is a generational talent. But Anthony Davis just completed his seventh season in the NBA. In those seven seasons, he has played in 13 playoff games, won five of them. It is now time for Anthony Davis to build a postseason resume. And as my partner Chris Carter brings up all the time, the next time there is a rookie who is making a dominant impact at this round or later in the NBA playoffs will be the first time in a long time. You can say, oh, what about the Celtics last year? Yeah. Celtics last year had nothing but young players.
Yeah, be careful.
Right. Those young players were not playing over veterans. Their veterans were injured. They were forced, pressed into duty, and they did a nice job. But those same young players then this year came back to the playoffs and looked like young players do. I thought it was impressive, and he earned a lot of my respect that Nikola Jokic had the postseason he had, because he's still a young player. It's year four for him. Zion is compared to LeBron, and he's not LeBron, but let's compare him to LeBron. LeBron did not get to the playoffs until his third year, did not have a real playoff run until his fourth year. So I understand the people like, man, Anthony Davis and Zion, but if you're Anthony Davis, you are right now in the heart of the prime of your career. You can go play on an instant contender, or you can help build a contender with Zion. I would prefer the latter rather the former rather than the latter.
But you don't know. So it's giving up what you might know with Zion for something that you don't know where the Pelicans are going to trade you. So you could end up being traded for a lot, so you are the only guy in another team.
Yeah, well, this is the thing, Jenna. He's made demands in the way his contract is. Normally you would think, no, you're not going to know where you're going to get traded. But the way Anthony Davis is and the way this goes, unless you do a Paul George OKC, which you have seen that work, unless you do a Kawhi, which we're right now, we don't know if that's going to work. But Anthony Davis has put demands that I will only sign an extension with Los Angeles, with the Knicks. Like, there's a couple of other teams, but those are the teams. So you can't just trade him anywhere, you know. So it would hurt the package that they're going to try to fetch from him. So this is the thing. The NBA, it does not stand for National Boys Association. This is about grown men. This is not about playing with kids. Now, we like it. We like the draft lottery. I think some of the things the NBA is doing is spectacular. But when you talk about postseason and postseason success, look at the teams we're watching. These are veteran-oriented teams that have some younger players that are sprinkled in. Now, so Anthony Davis, you're telling me if KD ends up in New York, we know LeBron's in L.A., with those teams having the third and fourth pick, and he has said, I will sign an extension with those teams, what he is saying is, I'd rather play with KD and LeBron rather than play with Zion. So he does know, though.
Right, and I think the premise is just slightly flawed in this regard, Jenna. A bad team. Paul George did stay in OKC.
And Kawhi might stay in Toronto.
Right, but they weren't traded to bad teams. They were traded to teams with a superstar. Kawhi was traded to a team that had the number one seed in their conference.
He was the star.
He was traded to a Raptors team that is ready to win right now, that was the number one seed in their conference last year. No team is going does not have an infrastructure in place that is far better than New Orleans is going to trade for Anthony Davis on a potential one-year rental. Whomever trades for him, it will be with a superstar alongside him or, similar to Toronto, a complimentary team alongside him to where you are instantly a contender. And on the New Orleans side of things, David Griffin is an excellent GM. And he will, I believe, not make the same mistake with Zion that the previous GM, that the Dell Demps regime, the regime before, made with Anthony Davis. Holding on to Anthony Davis with the hope that maybe we can convince him to re-sign would be doing a disservice to the Zion Williamson era. You can have a three-year rebuild boiled down into 1 year when you have Zion Williamson and whatever package you get for Anthony Davis, because the Lakers jumped in the lottery, because the Knicks didn't fall all the way to five. Like, you can get Zion plus another top four pick plus another high upside young player, and you can all of a sudden say, okay, we can contend with Zion with young players, not by overpaying for older players, starting not this year, but the year after this year, which is the ideal situation for New Orleans. So David Griffin, I think, won twice yesterday. He won by getting the number one pick, and he won by how the lottery fell
by the
Knicks
potential customers, with the Lakers and the Knicks still being there in the top four.
Let's talk about the Lakers. Does the Lakers now seem far more attractive in potential trade swapping with New Orleans than they did before when these failed conversations took place months ago?
Well, this is the best news of the Lakers since LeBron James signed with them.
Yep.
I mean, them being able to be out of the top 10, which is customary where they would have fallen, when they got into the top four, now they got right back into the Anthony Davis. If the Pelicans would have known the Lakers have the number four pick, Anthony Davis wouldn't be on the Pelicans.
Correct.
They would have traded him, because now look at the Lakers' offer. All those young players, pick whichever one you want. And now you have the fourth pick. So it's far more appealing now for the Lakers. The Lakers are one of the big winners in yesterday's lottery.
Oh, to me, Pelicans won, Lakers two, as far as the biggest winners from yesterday. Also, the Lakers won in this regard, as far as going after Anthony Davis. If Boston's going to continue to try to go after Anthony Davis, they got terribly unlucky yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
In that Memphis pick, it was top eight protected. So Boston was hoping that Memphis pick would fall at nine. It jumped into the top eight all the way to two. So now that's a future pick. The Sacramento pick, which they had the slimmest of chances, but if it fell 2, 3, 4, they get it no matter what, unless it went number one. It stays right there where it was supposed to stay at 14. So if you're Boston now, you've got the 14th pick, the Clippers pick, your own pick, all mediocre picks to bad picks in the first round. You're not going to trade Tatum. The lottery last night, the Celtics needed some luck, and they got the opposite of that. So to me, you can almost cross them off the Anthony Davis sweepstakes. Mm-hmm. The Chicago Bulls, they got unlucky in the lottery yesterday. They were staring at potentially having the 4th pick. They fell to the 7th pick. The Lakers, to go from, you're supposed to be 11. Now you're mm-hmm. at 4. Obviously, for the Lakers, ideally, it would have been, I think, 3. If they had gotten 1 or 2, the way they're running the franchise now, they might have held on to it and just said, we're going to build around Zion and Ja and try to stay young. But at 3 or 4, the Lakers now have a real trade chip to include with Ingram and Ball or Ingram and Kuzma. And I'm looking around the league. I wonder who's going to trump that. The Knicks have the 3rd pick, but is Kevin Knox enough of an upgrade? Is Kevin Knox good enough? I like Kevin Knox as a player, but does he have the upside of Ingram? Does he have the upside of Ball? I don't know. So I think the Pelicans are thrilled, and the Lakers have to be really thrilled as well with the way this fell.
All right, so the Pelicans and the Lakers come out winners yesterday. Mm-hmm. Were the Knicks the losers? We'll talk about that. But coming up, are the Warriors just as good without Kevin Durant? We'll revisit that next on First Things First. The 2019 FIFA Women's World Cup kicks off June 7th. All eyes on Alex Morgan, Carly Lloyd, Megan Rapinoe, and the U.S. Women's National Team as the defending champions head to France, looking to win a historic 4th World Cup. All the matches will be live here on Fox and FS1. Time now for us to go viral. Marcus Peters had a good season for the Rams last year. The corner was a big part of a defense that won the NFC Championship. While football is working out just fine for Peters, could have another career on the horizon.
And it's a gorgeous day outside, but, you know, I feel like we should do the weather because we have a new weather guy here.
Right, dear?
That's right. This is Marcus.
What's going on?
Marcus Peters from the L.A. Rams.
Hey.
There you are. How's the weather, Marcus?
Oh, the weather doing good, man. We got a big waves over here. Little waves over here, bitty little tiny sharks down here. You know,
show us where the camp's gonna be.
The camp gonna be like right here, right?
Over the ocean.
Yeah, no, the island right there. Oh. We gonna be inside of that.
Yeah, the camp is at tomorrow at Punahou. Now you're going surfing. You said you're going surfing. You're gonna check out the waves tomorrow.
Yeah, I can go all like this.
Now, where are you going surfing? Show us.
I'm going to go surfing right there with the big waves, right there with this one. You got the two? Or this one right here, South Shore. South Shore. That's what looks like the best waves for me that I can go. Do a little bitty big waves, but, you know.
Not as easy as it looks, huh?
Hell no.
Trying to get on your corner, C. Football player turned weather expert.
Oh, yeah, but you can't do it with the screen and everything because you have to stand to the side and everything. You can only go in so much when they have the green shot
opposite.
In the back. Yeah,
yep.
Everything's opposite of what you think. Jenna Wolf, she knows that with her experience.
Absolutely.
I mean, I like to be able to talk about the weather and everything because it's important because I play an outdoor sport. But that right there, when you go to Hawaii, stay off them waves, man. Don't do that. I almost drowned in the Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
Out there.
That's a true story.
Yes.
How long were you out there for, C?
Long time. Felt like weeks. Probably like 30 seconds. I took in a lot of salt water.
Oh, God.
All right, stories to start your morning. Bucks beat the Raptors in game one of the conference finals last night. 108-100 was your final. Don't blame Kyle Lowry. He had 30 points and was the only Raptor to hit a field goal in the fourth quarter. See, how important is Lowry if Toronto is going to win this series?
Oh, it's important. They didn't need him in series number one. In Philadelphia, he could take a game or two off in that series, and they could still be able to get through, which they were able to because Kawhi, but not this team, not Milwaukee, not as strong as they are, the type of pressure that they put on you, and it opens up the court. Lowry's able to continue shooting the ball close to the way he did last night. It gives Toronto a great chance to be able to pull off the upset.
And if Toronto has any chance of pulling off the upset, it's not just that he's going to have to score, not 30 a game, but at least 20 a game, but the things he was doing defensively, the steal mid-fourth quarter that kind of stifled a Bucks run, drawing charges throughout the basketball mm-hmm. game, all those little Kyle Lowry things, he's going to have to dominate his matchup with Eric Bledsoe. Bledsoe struggled last night in large part because of Kyle Lowry. That's going to have to continue, and that's more likely to continue than him hitting 7 three-pointers and scoring 30 points.
All right, moving on. Anthony Davis. Many thought the Lakers lucking into the number 4 pick in the lottery set them up to land the Pelicans' big man, but it seems that's not the case. Reportedly, New Orleans is still not interested in trading AD to the Lakers. Nick, your thoughts?
My thoughts are I'm very interested in knowing what the definition of interested is in this report, because I have been told that David Griffin, when he was talking about taking that job, was told unequivocally, you are empowered to make the best Anthony Davis trade. Now, I think he and everyone in the Pelicans organization would prefer him not go to the West, and particularly prefer him not go to the Lakers. But if they make the best offer, I believe he can make, he's not prohibited from trading to him. But the Lakers are going to have to trump the Knicks offer, the Bulls offer, mm-hmm. Boston, anyone else that gets involved. Because if it's close, the tie is going to go out east and the tie is going to go anti-Los Angeles.
If I'm David Griffin, I'm not trying to trade him out west. If I'm ever trying to build a championship, I'm not going to be going through Anthony Davis. And I'm not going to, David Griffin, he has hands-on experience with LeBron James. He getting ready, gift wrapped Anthony Davis. So what a chance him winning the championship the next 5 years? Zero. So for me, I'm looking at just like Greg Popovich. He told Kawhi, Kawhi, you're my guy now. I love you and everything. But I'm not going to make the Lakers better. And I'm definitely going to try to do what's best for the organization. And you can see Greg Popovich, he didn't get the best deal for Kawhi. But he avoided playing against him the number of times he had to play against him. And if he had to go through him in the playoffs by shipping him to Toronto.
All right, moving on. The Grizzlies have the number two pick, and they seem to know exactly who they want. Reports are that Memphis is locked in on John Morant out of Murray State. See, how well does Morant's game translate to the NBA?
Oh, man, he's a pass-first guy,
yep.
who could score 30 points eventually. Like, if he averaged 28 to 30 in the NBA at one point, I wouldn't be surprised. But his ability to be able to see the court, he has a really high basketball IQ. He's very, very explosive. For a guy his size, he can finish above the rim. And Memphis, you got to be able to take him, man. It's right down Route 40, I think, from Murray, Kentucky, down to Memphis. It's about a three-hour car ride down Route 40, man. You got to be able to get him.
Listen, what C said about the way his skills on the court translates 100% accurate. He is none of these highlights show it because they're not as fun to watch, but he's an elite passer, obviously an explosive athlete. Now, some of that weight people want Zion to lose, he might need to find.
Yeah.
He's going to need to bulk up a bit, as most of these rookies are going to. But for Memphis, they're probably going to flip Mike Conley and let Ja take over. I think it's a great spot for him to grow, him and Jaren Jackson Jr., two young potential blue chippers. Memphis, we didn't talk much about them yesterday. New Orleans got lucky. The Lakers got lucky. Memphis jumping all the way up to the number two spot and getting Ja, very fortunate for them. He's
a no-brainer. I always find it funny when you call these NBA guys like blue chippers, like when you're covering high school, like, oh, he's a blue chip, he's a five-star. I think it's cute.
Okay. I always try to be cute for you, C.
Finally, Pelicans got the number one pick in Tuesday night's NBA draft lottery, and it's all but a lock. They take Zion Williamson, but Zion is an all but a lock to take them. Zion has yet to sign with an agent, and Brian Windhorst pointed out that because of that, the Duke phenom could possibly return to Durham next season and be a Blue Devil again. Nick, you buying any of this?
I'm buying that it's factually accurate.
Which
that Zion Williamson has not taken any money from Nike or Adidas. He has not. Okay, well, that we know about. That is a confirmed.
Right.
He has not signed with an agent. So he is allowed to say, oh, no, I've tested the waters. My draft profile's come back. It's not what I hoped it would be. I'm going to go back to
He's like Andrew Luck or something.
Right. Yeah, I'm buying that it's correct that he has the ability to. But much like I told Colin Cowherd yesterday when I was on with him, when he was talking about Zion doing this, it would be ridiculous. It would be foolish. It would set him back. And why would you do it? So you can go back, play at Duke. Oh, and then you get to play for the Knicks. No, you don't. Then you deal with the lottery again. Mm-hmm. And maybe you don't love New Orleans. I happen to think New Orleans is a great place for a player of his caliber right now. They're going to have assets from Anthony Davis. They have a respected coach. They have an excellent GM. But so you're going to go back in the lottery. Why? So you can maybe get drafted by the Bulls, by Phoenix, by what? He's not going to be able to force his way to a particular team. And so to me, this is a lot of noise about nothing. It would be beyond shocking to me if Zion Williamson said, I'm going to go play another year of college basketball.
If he goes to play college basketball, what are you going to work on? He's going to work on his jump shot? Well, let me go get paid millions in the NBA and work on my jump shot. The same against better players with better coaching. Zion's not going back to college. Yes. Is it on the board as far as one of the options he's got? Yes. Is the kid a little disappointed? But let's not forget, he's a kid, man. He doesn't know anything about professional sports. Man, he's been watching everything just like us. He probably thought there was an 80% chance he was going to the Knicks, and the Knicks did love him. He probably thought there was an 85% chance he was going to the Atlanta Hawks, and he wanted to go to those two places. He was shocked because the team that had a 6% chance, they won it. They won the lottery, and now he potentially could go there, and I think not knowing if Anthony Davis is going to be there. If Anthony Davis is going to be there, I'm pretty sure Zion would have been like, hey, guys, let's get over with this, man. You can sign me today.
Yeah.
But the kid's 18, 19 years old. This is his first experience in the NBA. Like, let's just pump the brakes and allow him to be a kid. He will be in the NBA. It's the only move for him.
And at some point, someone, an advisor or family member or a smart person is going to say to him, hey, man, you're going to a team that has an established point guard. One of the most important things for a player of your position, the way you're going to play. They have Drew Holiday. People like Alvin Gentry. They are going to not, you're not going to a team where their future is X'd out because they have all these bad contracts. In fact, they're about to be able to have enormous flexibility.
Very good general manager.
Right. And so this is, it might not be the glitz and glamour of New York City, but the other element, this should all be about basketball, but I get it. At 19 years old, you're thinking about other things. There's worse things than being young and rich and living in New Orleans. I think he's going to end up being very happy, and I think this is a great spot for him to go along his natural progression.
I don't think this has anything to do with New Orleans. I think this has to do with the surprise of the situation. All right? What happened to him was unprecedented. The lottery had just changed. They didn't do a good job on the lottery because I was confused. When teams start jumping up into those first four spots, he didn't know all the ramifications. I know because we had been going over this, over this. So the newness to it all is shocking to the kid.
Can I ask you this real quick, though? Don't you think because even if people thought he was the Knicks were going to get that pick, even though they only had a 14% chance, if he was following it at all, a lot of the noise was they would then trade it to New Orleans. So even if the Knicks get it, it had to be on I would imagine Zion thought it's possible I'm ended up in New Orleans, not because they get the number one pick, but because the Knicks could trade me for Anthony Davis.
I talked to someone that said he was going to be playing in New York City.
But we should mention, none of this is coming from Zion Williamson. This is not Zion saying he doesn't want to play for the Pelicans,
correct,
or he's not happy, or he only wanted to play for the Knicks. This is just...
Everybody's a body language expert on how he reacted when they won
because
the lottery.
Because he was with
that. Did people forget when they blew out his shoe, the people were telling him to stop playing?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, people forgot that.
Back. They want him to go back for another year.
All right, let's talk some football now. On to the NFL. The Cowboys have a number of long-term deals to finish up this offseason, most notably one big one for quarterback Dak Prescott. Dallas has all but promised him an extension for almost a year now. Whether you think he deserves it now or not, since 2016, only Tom Brady has won more games than Prescott, believe it or not. Dak, not too concerned about all this contract talk.
My whole focus is within the locker room. I've got people that take care of that. I've got a great team of agents. That's their job. Jerry said what he's had to. They're working, negotiating. But as far as I'm concerned, it's about just getting better as a quarterback, getting better as a leader, and just making sure our team's getting better.
I think about wanting this out of the way before training camp starts or the season starts or anything like that.
I want to be a Cowboy forever. I think the people that are doing the deal feel the same way. So to me, it's no rush. I know it'll get done.
CC, has Dak Prescott already done enough to prove that he deserves a long-term contract?
Absolutely. Based on the way the NFL is doing, the way they give out contracts to quarterbacks, absolutely. Now, he might not have played, might not have thrown the ball as well as people like, but we have to say, what is the real standard for being a franchise quarterback? And he has passed that standard. He is a great leader. He is very, very durable. He is improving as a passer. And when they have given him, as you saw with the sample size we saw this year, when they traded for Amari Cooper, you saw the best of him throwing the football. So, yeah, you can judge it by some of the stuff is rookie year, some of the stuff is second year, but you also have to throw in they were able to throw the ball as effective as we've seen him with when they had a Pro Bowl elite-type wide receiver. So I believe that that progression will only continue. Now, do I think he's Russell Wilson? Do I think he's ever going to be Aaron Rodgers? No, but that don't mean you can't be a franchise quarterback if we're being fair. If we're judging everything on what we see every day and we're not making certain stipulations because he plays with the Cowboys or things like that, oh, he's got a good offensive line. Dak Prescott is a franchise quarterback. Now, will he be one of the elite quarterbacks? That part right there is going to be hard to be able to get in that class. We have the best throwers of the football we have ever had in pro football, top to bottom. And Dak Prescott has played well enough to deserve to be a franchise quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys.
I think there are two points you made that are so incredibly key. One is the Amari Cooper, how he played after Amari got there and what the discussion was when they traded a first-round pick for Amari Cooper, which seemingly everyone in the national media except for Chris Carter thought they were overpaying for, thought that the Raiders got the better end of that deal in real time. Part of the discussion was, yeah, they're trading for Amari, but it's also for information on Dak. How will Dak play once he has a real number one wide receiver? Well, he passed that test with flying colors. Even the biggest Dak Prescott skeptic has to concede that the second half of the season, once Amari was there, his numbers were top 10 quarterback in the league numbers. And the other point you made, which is where I have to adjust my standard, is my standard.
Oh, that's the news flag. Put that. That's breaking news.
What's that?
You have to adjust your standard.
Well, because my standard is clearly not the standard that NFL teams have. I think teams pay these guys too early. I think teams have made a constant mistake year after year of paying top market quarterback dollars for guys who one day might approach being top of the market quarterbacks. But that is consistent throughout the league. Got quarterbacks that have his resume or worse with a year left on their contract to get paid. So the fact that I would not, it's not how I would run my football team. I don't got a football team. And everyone that has a football team does it this way.
Right.
That with a year left on his deal, they get paid.
There's nothing wrong with the way you're looking at it, but it's going to be hard for you and it's going to be hard for a quarterback to want to be your quarterback based on your standard. These guys get hurt too often, and what they have to do to be able to sit in that pocket and stomach, there's no one in football has got a job like a quarterback, and take that hit in the chest, on the chin. There's no one. I need guarantees. For that guy to come do his job and to continue progressing, I need some guarantees in his life. There are certain things we don't want him to be able to worry about. So I can understand that, but you're not going to get one of the upper echelon guys unless you have an awful season and you get lucky that year with the quarterback. But, man, grooming these quarterbacks is not a science. And owners have lost millions upon millions. There is no other position that is misevaluated more than the quarterback.
But he has the two things that you really, you're right, that you can't judge, you can't tell, and that's the durability and the leadership. And those are the two intangibles that whatever you think about his skill, he has those two without a doubt. And I think that's the thing that Jerry Jones loves about him.
Well, I would consider the durability a tangible. I mean, he's never missed a game. Incredibly important. When we look at the quarterback in his division, who I think most people believe is a more skilled quarterback, certainly a more polished passer, that's the only question about Carson Wentz is durability. And the other somewhat question is leadership with the reports out of the locker room. People, we know Dak's durable, and his teammates seem to say he's a really good leader. I think your point about the quarterbacks having to have the security because you ask them to stand in the pocket, to take those hits in order to keep your offense moving, the other reason for Dak why he has to get paid, even if, again, I would have been hesitant, is because they have told him he's going to get paid. They've told the entire world he's going to get paid. So once you do that,
we'll let him become a free agent, see what happens.
Right, well, you can't go backwards on it, right? Once you tell the entire world we're going to pay him with a year left on his deal, we're not even going to consider franchise tagging him, this is the route we're going to go, we're not just hearing that. He's hearing that. He's building in a guy who's never made real NFL money. He's on a fourth-round rookie contract. He's building in, I'm about to have generational wealth. I'm about to be able to do what Russell Wilson just did, buy my mama a house if I want to.
Right.
You can't renege on that almost promise you've made.
Yeah, we look at it as if, was this guy a first-round pick? Oh, he's never made real money. As an organization, they don't look at it that way. That's not their fault. That was the lane assignment that these players had coming into the league. But they must invest in Dak Prescott. He has done the things they have asked him to do. And they've made commitments to other players who haven't been as
DeMarcus Lawrence.
He hadn't been as consistent as Dak has been.
Certainly hasn't been as important as Dak has been.
Yeah, so you spent money on other players that haven't been as consistent. You got to be able to pay the guy.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, did the Raptors miss their best shot to beat the Bucks in this series? That's ahead on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, FS1 NBA analyst Chris Broussard joins the show. Talk a little basketball.
Welcome back, man.
Good to be back every day.
Good stuff. All right, let's talk some Anthony Davis, Broussard. He reportedly still wants to be traded out of New Orleans and still wants to play with LeBron and the Lakers. Trade talks with the Lakers failed earlier this year. But now that L.A. has that fourth pick in their pocket, talks could start up again. However, despite that fourth pick, reports are the Pelicans still do not want to send AD to the Lakers. They'd like to keep him in the East. Broussard, are the Pelicans making a mistake if they refuse to deal AD to the Lakers? And would it be just about the East, or is there a little bit of
Lakers
bad blood?
Yeah, there's
spite.
Of course there's bad blood. There should be. You're trying to get our best player. So I get that. But it would be a mistake to just absolutely rule out the Lakers under any circumstances. Number one, by dealing with the Lakers, it gives you more leverage with other teams.
Yes. All right? No, and you need the Lakers to come correct.
Right, exactly. So, and at the end of the day, no general manager wants to send a star player within their conference, okay? Everybody's going to try to send them to the other conference. But at the end of the day, you have got to make the best deal for your team. And if the Lakers deal is so much better, like if Boston doesn't offer up a lot of their young players because they don't think AD will stay, if the Knicks can't maybe get a third team involved, or if you're not that high on RJ Barrett, then at the end of the day, you may have to deal with the Lakers. And of course, Anthony Davis has some leverage in this as well. Not 100%, but he's got leverage. There's only two teams I know of that he will tell I'll stay long term.
Yes.
New York Knicks and Los Angeles Lakers. Now, I think of the three teams, you throw Boston in there, that who could make the best offer? Boston, I think, could make the best offer.
But I don't think they will make the best offer because the best offer involves Jason Tatum.
Right.
You would agree if they...
I think Danny Ainge would be crazy, but Danny Ainge has taken some risk before.
Fair enough. But so to me, we're lucky in this regard. David Griffin was in media for a full year before he took this job. And before he was the Pelicans GM, he was asked as a media member, as a former GM, if you were running the Pelicans, what would you want for Anthony Davis? So we know what he said, at least in that seat. He would want an elite draft pick, which is, call it, top five draft pick. He would want a player, what I call a blue chip player, what he called a blue chip player, a guy with all-star potential and an established veteran. So we can go down the list of teams that could provide all of those assets to him. For Boston, what's tough is the best pick they have is the 14th pick. Now they have the Memphis pick. Next year's top six protected. The year after that is unprotected. So it would either be the seventh or worst pick next year from Memphis, or unprotected the following year. But Boston, to me, does not get in the game without Jason Tatum, because the other players are Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown they'd be offering. So if they're not going to offer Tatum, and everything we've heard out of Boston is if Kyrie is not staying, they are not offering Jason Tatum, then you have the Bulls, who could make a very credible offer.
They're not going to get any guarantee that he stay long term.
Which is why you would think, will the Bulls really offer Wendell Carter? Will they give up their best options when it could just be on a one-year rental? So now we come back to the Knicks and the Lakers. And to me, this is a question of how much do you love R.J. Barrett?
Right.
If you love R.J. Barrett, if you think R.J. Barrett is that much better than whomever is going to go fourth, then you make the deal with the Knicks. If you just think he's somewhat better than whatever player is going to go fourth, the players the Lakers can offer are better, one for one, player for player, than the players the Knicks can offer.
The thing you're leaving out, though, is a three-team deal. Like, the Knicks would probably have to go get a third team involved to send a better player to New Orleans.
Because you're looking at the Knicks have Kevin Knox, Dinsmith Jr., Mitchell Robinson. The Lakers have Brandon Ingram, blood clots and all, Lonzo Ball, Kyle Kuzma. All of those guys are better than their contemporary in the other column. And I agree, to circle back to your first point, I agree you have to make the best deal. I think ties can go to the East, but I think that if you're building around Zion, you're not going to contend for a championship the next couple of years anyway. You have to be most concerned about what the best deal is.
But as you mentioned earlier, did Popovich make the best deal for Kawhi, or did he just want Kawhi out of the conference?
It's hard to believe there wasn't a better deal out there for Kawhi. When you look at the assets that were traded, him and Danny Green coming over, what the Spurs got. So we have seen it done. Bill Belichick talked about it. There was a reason why he didn't trade Jimmy Garoppolo to the AFC because he didn't want to play against him. This has been going on in sports for a long time, and now you're talking about one of the iconic franchises in the Lakers. There is not a lot of people on the surface that just want to help the Lakers be better. Right. So before we even start that, forget the Pelicans, wherever David Griffin was. No one is trying to help the Pelicans. Then you throw in, oh, what about the Rich Paul? What about that LeBron mix? People aren't trying to help them build some type of empire so LeBron can get more championships. So this is the thing, though. If I'm David Griffin, I do exactly what's reported out there right now. I ain't trying to trade them to the West. I ain't trying to trade them to the Lakers because the Lakers really have the best players. Now, the Knicks, they need another team because – most NBA executives this year believe it is a three-player draft. And then the drop-off after that number three pick is drastic. So that's where the Knicks are with that third pick. So they do hold that carrot right there. And they're the only team that can provide a special combination in Zion and RJ continuing on playing basketball together, which I believe can be a great NBA story. So I believe David Griffin is going to do the right thing. And ultimately, I can force the Lakers to give me more because I'm not trying to make a deal with you. And that's what I would keep projecting from a media standpoint until we get the deal done, Chris.
Yeah, and a big factor, too, will be what happens with Kawhi Leonard. If he stays in Toronto, we will then have seen two players who everyone thought were going to L.A. or some other team, Oklahoma City. If you can convince Paul George to stay there, and if Toronto can convince Kawhi Leonard to stay there, then other teams may be emboldened. A Chicago,
a Denver,
Boston,
certainly a Boston,
and I would say a Denver. Would say because they would think, man, we can compete for a championship immediately, and that could convince them to stay.
And I'm gonna say this too: there is a reason for teams to believe that. You know, look, Kawhi Leonard, regardless of what he ends up doing, he is having a great experience in Toronto with his teammates.
Yes.
You guys are going deep into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You're playing together. The fans love you. That's a whole year of recruiting that a team can do. And certainly a franchise like Boston, with all the history, with all the legends that you can bring in to help you recruit him.
Yeah.
Kevin Garnett, he didn't want to go to Boston.
No, he didn't.
They won
and he went there and he ended up loving it.
Yeah, I mean, because they wanted a super high level immediately.
He wished he had gone now earlier in his career.
Yep.
So it's going to be very interesting to see how this goes.
All right, Chris, stick around. Coming up, did the Raptors miss their best chance to beat the Bucks in this series? Next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, FS1 NBA analyst Chris Broussard joins us.
What up, man?
What's up, brother?
What's up, Chris? All good?
How are you?
Good.
All good.
Good. We've loved having you here this week.
It's been a great week.
A lot of fun.
It's
this
always
week.
Great with you guys.
All right, let's talk. The latest now with Anthony Davis. AD wants out of New Orleans, that we know. And there is no shortage of teams looking to trade for him, that we assume. According to a report, the Celtics are viewed now as the most attractive trade partner for the Pelicans. In addition to young players like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, Boston has the numbers 14, 20, and 22nd pick in this year's draft. Broussard, should the Celtics blow up their young core for Anthony Davis?
It all depends on Kyrie Irving, period. That's like the end of the discussion. He's close with Anthony Davis. He can be talking to Anthony Davis right now. The Celtics should be talking to Kyrie. Look, if we can get AD, will you stay? That's it. And if Kyrie's just out of there, then I wouldn't worry about Anthony Davis if I'm them. So if Kyrie will stay, then I would trade Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Terry Rozier, whoever, all these young guys out of there. Because one thing that does is get rid of your problem you had this year. because it was a lot of the young guys who felt like they were better than they were. They've got to the conference finals without Kyrie. They're also in their rookie contracts, so trying to establish themselves as individual stars to get the big money. You get rid of all of that, then you'd have a big three of Kyrie, Anthony Davis, and Gordon Hayward. You still got Al Horford, Marcus Smart. You could probably keep him, maybe Marcus Morris. Like, that's a nice squad. Now, that changes the tenor of your whole squad. And then the question becomes, can Brad Stevens handle all these Mercedes Benzes? Because that he didn't do that this year. So if Kyrie's out of there, there's no way I'm giving up my youngsters for what's probably a one-year rental. Because they're not going to – if they give up all those guys, Jason Tatum and so on, and lose Kyrie, they're not going to be as good as Milwaukee.
Well, that's –
they're not going to be as good as Philadelphia,
let me ask
probably.
You this. If they trade – if Kyrie leaves and they trade all those guys, are they as good as New Orleans? Like, if Anthony Davis...
That's a fair question.
Anthony Davis, like, Zion, Drew Holiday, and me versus what would be left in Boston,
right,
which is what? Gordon Hayward trying to come back, Al Horford if he opts in, and Anthony Davis.
You would make the playoffs because the East isn't as deep. But that's it. You're right.
But I think they would be
a contender.
I think they should make the playoffs if you were to stay in New Orleans next year with Drew Holiday, Zion, and a full 82 games.
They should have been able to fight for it this year.
Absolutely. But so here's the thing. I think at first glance, you're like, man, David Griffin said what he wants before he was the GM of the Pelicans is an elite draft pick, an elite young player, and an established veteran. Well, the Celtics can offer that Memphis pick, which one day might be an elite draft pick. They don't have an elite draft pick now. 14, 20, and 22 are.
Right.
14's okay. 20 and 22 are 1 in 20 lottery tickets. But the Memphis pick, there's the elite draft pick. The established player is Marcus Smart, who I think they have to include for cap purposes because of salaries. And then the young star is Jason Tatum. And that then just, and I think Jason Tatum's obviously better than any young player the Lakers have to offer, better than any young player the Knicks have to offer. But is Jason Tatum actually a future All-Star? Is Jason Tatum the guy that looked like he was going to be after his rookie year? Or is he the guy that looks like he leveled off in year two? I got a fun little blind reveal for you. We haven't done one of these in a while. There's Jason Tatum. The guy on the right, same age, same draft class. He's about 5 inches taller, almost same percentage from three, more points, more rebounds. Who's the guy on the right? If we could, please. Maybe. Lauri Markkanen. If Lauri Markkanen was the centerpiece of a trade, because the Bulls can offer
That's different. Lauri Markkanen's playing on a bad team.
We got to rebate all the
right. Jason Tatum was playing on a team that was going for a championship. And Kyrie Irving's presence changed everything.
Agreed on all points, but the how much are we going to subtract from Markkanen's numbers? How much? What do we think they would look like if those two guys flip flopped? Do we think Lauri Markkanen couldn't have put up the season Jason Tatum did in Boston this year?
He's not nearly as good as Jason Tatum.
You think it's a massive gap, Markkanen to Tatum?
And I like Markkanen, but no, come on.
You think Jason Tatum's a future All-Star?
You can't just put a bunch of numbers on the screen and say who's better. You got to look at the context.
No, I agreed, but the context
is also... If they played the same position, you might be able to do some comparison, but their skill sets are totally different. I understand what you're trying to say because he's just trying to make the point for Chicago as a franchise. But the truth of the matter is, all that don't matter. Anthony Davis don't want to go to Chicago. He's from Chicago. Anthony Davis does not want to go to Boston.
Right.
So if Kyrie says, I'm out, Anthony Davis, they don't have that prime pick this year that David Griffin said that he wants.
Right.
And now you can't put Tatum into a deal and Kyrie being out because people have talked about the Kawhi experience, all right? And, okay, it's been good. But first day of free agency, Kawhi could be with the Clippers. And then everybody would be talking about, you know, Paul George, that really worked out. That's a precedent. Well, Paul George might have made a mistake. They got bumped in round number one. He's not going to be getting all that goodwill. Oh, man, great job. Small market, man. Great to watch. Watch other players try to follow this. No siree. Man, guys want to win. And in this, I believe that Kyrie realized because he didn't pick Boston.
Right.
Man, I get my second chance at this. I don't know how long I'm going to play. I'm getting ready to get me a superstar. So he can either go to New York and either try to lure someone to Brooklyn or he can join LeBron in L.A. If I'm Kyrie, man, I'm not thinking about playing in Boston anymore.
Even if you could get AD, like, and I don't know that AD would stay even with AD Kyrie, but you talk to him.
This is the thing. AD does not have the personality to change the franchise. because Kyrie was not – when those
Kyrie
guys –
Kyrie would still be the leader. It'd still be Kyrie's team. I agree with that.
Yes, and just because you ship those guys out of the locker room, Kyrie has a problem leading. So even though he's not leading though Tatum, Rozier, all right, but he's going to be leading some other young players.
So we've been talking about this for a couple weeks now. Where do you think, if it isn't Boston then, that AD ends up?
I think he ends up in New York. Because I think David Griffin is going to make it very hard on the Lakers to get that deal done. One, because it's the Lakers and the whole situation. Two, because it's the West. And New York, we only know of two places that Anthony Davis would say, I'll stay long term. New York and the Lakers. And so the Lakers, RJ, look, the idea of pairing RJ Barrett and Zion Williamson, I love that idea. I think both those guys, you think Zion will put up big numbers? I think RJ Barrett can come into the league and score right away. You got him and Jrue Holiday in your backcourt. That's pretty good. Then New York may have to get a third team involved. Yeah. To get a veteran that they want. But they also got picks from Dallas they can offer in the future.
They have the 2021 pick from Dallas. The 2023 pick from Dallas is probably going to end up being a second rounder or a bad first rounder.
But so they have an unprotected.
The 2021. No, the unprotected is
now,
2021.
Now, Dallas may be good by then with Luka, but.
Anthony Davis, to me, I agree with Broussard. It's New York or L.A., and it will come down to how good does David Griffin think R.J. Barrett is? If he thinks R.J. Barrett, like you said, Chris, you talked to a GM that thought it was a three-person draft.
Yep.
If he agrees it's a three-person draft, then he will go to the Knicks. If he thinks it's a two-person draft, like some guys do, Zion and Ja, and then there's a muddle 3 through 7, the Lakers can offer better players that are currently in the league to go along with the fourth pick. That's the – we don't know where Anthony Davis is going. I feel like we know this. Kyrie Irving is not going back to Boston. Kyrie Irving did not have a good time this year in Boston. And last year, when he was having a good time, he got hurt. And so Danny Ainge has not shown the propensity to go all in with no backup plan. And losing Kyrie, trading away what was your haul from that Nets heist for what could just be 1 year of Anthony Davis on a mediocre team would not make sense.
All right, Chris, stick around. Take a break. Coming up, how were the Warriors able to pull out the win last night? Talk about that next on First Things First. Here, Chris Broussard, Blazers, Warriors, Game 2. KD out for this one. Might be out for a while. Warriors trailed by as many as 17 in this, but Kevon Looney's dunk with 53 seconds left puts them up 1. 15 seconds to go. Same score. Steph Curry to Draymond Green, and the Warriors go up 3. Big night for Green. Last chance for Portland. Dame Lillard. Oh, stripped by Andre Iguodala. Lillard wanted the foul. No call there. Warriors pull out the win, 114-111. They now go up 2-0 in the series. Steph dropping 37 in this one. Here's Steve Kerr after the win.
We stole that game. I thought they outplayed us for much of the night, the majority of the night. But, you know, we brought enough competitive fire in the second half to overcome, you know, their great play.
I mean, they stole it, but they earned it down the stretch. They made more plays than us in, you know, the last 2 minutes, last 3 minutes. But, I mean, I like our chances going forward. I like the way we came out and competed. You know, we got to bring that same energy at home.
All right, Broussard, did the Warriors win this game or did the Blazers lose it?
I think the Warriors won. I really did. Whether it's cockiness, the complacency that's dogged them all year, or pacing themselves because they know KD is not there. I just felt like the Warriors weren't worried when they were down. Now, Kerr was concerned, but they weren't worried when they were down. And then when they needed to, twice, they turned it on. In the third quarter, in 4 minutes, they turned a 15-point deficit into a 1-point lead. And they did it. They did it with defense. Their defense got so much more aggressive, and they stopped Portland from getting offensive rebounds. They gave up 8 offensive rebounds to Portland in the first half, 2 in the second half, because they just wanted to. Kerr said his biggest problem with the first half was that they didn't play hard enough, and they didn't. It wasn't no strategic adjustments. It was like, look, let's get after it. They got after it in the third quarter, took the lead, let their foot off the gas a little bit. Then late in the game, they did the same thing. They turned it on. Now, we can sit here and say, well, Portland made some mistakes defensively. They made some errors. They lost track of Steph or Clay or whatever. But that's the problem when you play Golden State.
Yeah, it's confusing.
Right. You have to play 48 minutes of error-free basketball for the most part defensively. And as much as they move around, as much as you have to extend your defense 30 feet, you're going to make mistakes here or there. They made a few. Golden State took advantage. So I just think they turned it on when they needed to.
Yeah, I thought Golden State won the game. Golden State made some serious adjustments at halftime after an embarrassing first half. And that press in the second half, that trapping, forcing turnovers, and forcing Portland, they were starting their offense 35 to 40 feet away. You can't be a threat when they're trapping Damian Lillard and he's throwing the ball sideways and you don't put the ball into a playmaker's hand. So from a strategy standpoint, Steve Kerr at halftime, putting the press on, that ignited them, that got them started on the fast break where they started getting some easier looks. I like the way Portland approached the game, though. They made some strategic adjustments. They played a better game in game number two, but you got to give it to the champions. I always lean towards, because I tell people, if I drop a pass, it's not because I was nervous. It's not because I was a situation. I just dropped it. Either I wasn't concentrating, the ball was coming, it was a little bit difficult, but I dropped it. Most guys, when they miss shots, it's not as if they were thinking about missing that shot. It's just that they missed an open shot. Man, in the second half, Portland, their offense looked totally different. The Warriors, their overall ability to be aggressive and take the fight to Portland, they snatched this victory away from the Portland Trailblazers.
Listen, I want to give the Warriors immense credit. Steph was sensational. Draymond might have been even better given everything he did, just the way he pushing the pace, running the court. There was a moment in the when the Blazers took, I think, an eight-point lead midway through the fourth quarter. It was 108-100, and we'll get back to that moment later. Draymond beats everyone down the court and gets a layup to all of a sudden offset the Myers-Leonard three and getting a layup of his own. The Warriors were great in that third quarter in particular. That is where they, to me, that's where the Warriors put themselves in position for, in my eyes, to win the game. But then the Blazers not only weathered the storm, they did build an eight-point lead with four and a half minutes left. And from that moment forward, they made one shot. From that moment forward, Draymond took over the game. CJ was 0 for 5. Dame couldn't do anything. He missed one shot and then got the ball stolen from him. That was a tough one for Dame because Iggy was trying to foul because they were up three. They right. wanted to foul there. Didn't get the foul, ended up getting the steal despite it. It's tough for me. And this is the biggest game for any of these players on the Blazers ever, except for, I guess, Rodney Hood, who's played in the finals, and the biggest game in the franchise since, you remember the Kobe to Shaq lob?
Yep.
This is the biggest game for the Blazers.
15 going into the fourth quarter.
This is the biggest game the franchise has had since that moment. That was the year 2000. You're up eight with 4.5 minutes left with a chance to steal the game, to steal home court, I should say. If we're going to see in these series a team steal a game. I feel like Milwaukee kind of stole one from Toronto. Now we've had Golden State steal one from Portland. It's tough when the team that's the heavy favorite, the better team, is the one that steals a game they should have lost. That, to me, is what happened last night in Oracle.
But I think a lot of that, like, again, my opinion is that Golden State, we've seen it all year. When they get complacent, they turn it on when they need to. Kerr's complained about it. He mentioned in his quote, we just saw competitive fire. That's what they brought in bunches, and I think late when they got down eight, like, I don't think Portland just missed the shots. I think it was the defensive intensity that made them miss
on some of them. But CJ had two that were wide open.
CJ didn't have a great night, obviously, and that's one of the things Portland's got to look at going forward. Even in the previous series, CJ and Lillard have rarely had their big nights together.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.